And welcome to Touring It 2 for this June 28th, 2024. I am your host, Gregory T. Roberts, with my co-partner in Christ, Pastor Melvin Burns II. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, brother. How are you doing?
It's kind of different being in mothership, but we are in together. Listen, we have a very exciting show today. I am really excited. Listen, if you're driving, please remember that you can always come back and watch the show on all our feeds, WVS 103.7 to Beat or M106. You can catch it on YouTube, all over. So we're really excited to be here. Do me a favor also. This program is sponsored today by Stan Grisham. We want to thank you for being one of our first sponsors and continued sponsor. Share this message because we need to inform you and you need to hear today's word. What's the weather looking like, sir?
Well, unfortunately, we got rain today, a little sprinkles of rain, but it's supposed to let up later in the evening. We have a low 58, high of 77. Tomorrow, 60% chance of rain, low 67, high 80. Sunday and Monday, we got sunshine, low 56, high 70, and Monday, low 50, high 75. Tuesday, we'll come again with a low of 58 and high of 78, but again, a 40% chance of rain.
Our guest today is one of the most important guests that we've had in quite some time because his vision is extraordinary. He's known from a program called
the program is called Unlocked, yes. The Jail Experiment, and you folks may have seen it on Netflix. If not, you're in for a real treat today. Again, our guest is Sheriff Eric S. Higgins, the Pulaski County Sheriff, and he has an extensive history and background in law enforcement. It goes back to 1984. We're going to let him talk a little bit about himself today, and I think you're really going to be riveted today's guest and be well informed. So, without further ado, welcome to the stage, as my brother would say.
Put your hands together for Sheriff Eric S. Higgins.
Hey, I appreciate you both. Thank you for having me on. Thank you so much.
Hey, welcome to the show, Sheriff. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing real good today.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to go right into what you're doing because it's okay. Extraordinary.
Okay. Give you a little bit of my law enforcement background. I worked at Little Rock Police Department, started there in 1984 as a cadet. Worked my way up, thanks to the Lord, that reached the rank of assistant chief, was assistant chief for 10 years, retired in 2015. And after I retired, I started volunteering with a reentry program called the Exodus Project, helping men and women who were incarcerated in community corrections, helping them to come out and be successful. And then in 2018, I decided to run for sheriff. Actually, a couple of people approached me about running for sheriff, ran for sheriff, and the Lord blessed me to get elected in 2019. And part of what I wanted to do was start a reentry program at the sheriff's office and in our jail, and started that in May of 2019. So just a long career in law enforcement, grew up here in Little Rock, Arkansas, born in Louisiana. I try to always claim Louisiana as my home. My wife challenges me on that because I didn't spend that many years before we moved to Little Rock.
Go LSU.
There you go.
my family's from Little Rock as well. Sheriff, I watched all the episodes and was sitting on my chair on this. Explain to people a little bit about your vision about starting this program.
Okay. So it actually goes back to the reentry program. When I was volunteering, talking to the students, talking to the detainees about their needs and trying to help them, what can we do to help them while they're incarcerated? And one of the things they mentioned was that, they were in this program, which was classes that they were taking. And they mentioned that they needed to be together with other people who are going through the same thing, trying to better themselves, being the same unit. And I had an opportunity to approach one of the wardens and mention that to him. And the warden said that wasn't possible. They couldn't move our students into the same barrack, so to speak. So, you know, in teaching the class, I realized how important the peer support is for them to succeed. So when I ran for sheriff, I made the point that I was going to start a reentry program in the sheriff's office in our detention center and create that community. And so what we did was, and we started with the women because, again, as I was working with the reentry program, volunteering, the ladies mentioned that there's a lot of programs for men, but there's not enough programs for women. Mm-hmm. So I was determined to start our reentry program with our ladies. And so we started that in May of 2019. And we created the community. We brought those women who wanted, who felt like they needed some help, wanted to change their life. We brought them into a unit and started the classes with them. And the classes were, it's a 12-week program. They go to class 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. And as we worked out the kinks out of that program, then we eventually expanded to our men's program. And of course, this jail wasn't built for classes, and so we had to modify rooms to create space for to do this. So we moved to another part of the facility, and currently we have a little over 100 men that's in our reentry program, and about 50 women in the program. Now, it's from creating that community. I know we can transform the facility. We can make a safer facility. We can help people see their potential. I believe that, you know, what we communicate to people is so important. You know, I don't think we need to wait till someone spends 10 or 15 years in prison and before we try to rehabilitate them and help them come back into the community. Mm-hmm. 80% of the people who are booked into our county jail are released to the community. And therefore, I believe and I campaigned on having a reentry program in the county jail because people are coming back to our community. And if you do that right, you have a more immediate impact on individuals' lives. You can avoid them actually going to prison for long term, and you can have a positive impact on your community, creating less victims in your community, lowering crime in your community. And so that's been our focus. Now, I recognize that to be in our reentry program, you have to volunteer for that. I may have 200 or 150 people in our program. This is a 1,210-bed facility, and we average 1,330 in the facility, so we're overpopulated. If I'm going to create a safer facility, if I'm going to give more people an opportunity to see beyond their circumstances and recognize that they have opportunities, that even if they have a felony record, that doesn't define who they are. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to do that, then I need to do this in a typical unit. And so what we wanted to do was take a typical jail unit at the Plassey County Jail, which would include people charged with murder, people charged with aggravated assault, robbery. You'd have, you know, different races in there. You'll have people associated with different gangs, older people, younger people in the unit. To take that unit and give them some opportunity, responsibility, and some rewards to go along the way. Mm-hmm. And I felt that if we did that, that we could transform the unit. We could transform people's perception of themselves and their community. And that they would take a focus and hopefully learn that personally what they do can impact their community. And if you can impact that community in a jail setting, when you're living with people you didn't make arrangements to live with, you just happen to be together. If you can reach that transformation of being concerned about your community and being aware of your behavior that creates a safer and a community that benefits from their environment, then you can take that with you when you leave here or wherever you go, that mm-hmm. your home community, you can recognize that what you do can make a safer home community, neighborhood community, and a community at large. So that was the purpose behind it, is to give these men opportunities to see that they can be more than what people expect them to be, that they can rise up to the expectations. These people, these men are intelligent. They can create a community that benefits everyone there. And so that was the purpose behind it.
That's right.
Sheriff Higgins, what were some of the biggest hurdles you faced in getting your program off the ground? You talked about the classrooms, not having adequate classrooms. What were some of the other hurdles?
Well, getting buy-in from staff to understand that we're doing things differently. So trying to convince them to go along with the program. And then convincing people to come in and you know, we have volunteers that come and teach classes. Okay. So convincing them to come in and teach some of those classes. And I think you got to convince your students, because you can have all the programs, but if nobody wants to be a part of it, then you're going to fail from lack of participation. So you have to show them that you're serious. You have to show them that you do care about them and their well-being, that you're sincere. So the challenges are convincing the staff, convincing the students to be a part of it, and getting volunteers to come in. And of course, there's always the funding side of it to find the funding to do this.
Okay. I was in the prison yesterday, and one of the questions that the guy said is, why is it such a people are reluctant to try these things when it's been proven that the current criminal system doesn't work?
You know, we get so accustomed to doing things a certain way. And I think we have to really drill down into it. What is the purpose of the criminal justice system? Are we truly trying to rehabilitate people, or are we trying to punish people? And I think we have to get down to the core of it. I think for so long it's been about punishment, and people need to be held accountable for their actions. There's no doubt about that. But do we want people to come home? Do we want them to come home successful? Do we want them to change their behavior or recognize the circumstances that they're in now that they can improve themselves? Or we want to punish people for the rest of their life? Is it a us versus them mentality? And I think that's one of the challenges we have. We have that challenge in law enforcement. You know, is it us and the community, or is it us versus the community? And, you know, in law enforcement, you get so jaded. People don't call you to the house to let you know that the husband and wife had a great dinner and a great day and everything's going fine. We get called when there's a disturbance, when there's a problem. And so if you're not careful, when you just focus on those calls you go to, the small percentage of the population that you see on a daily basis, you can begin to believe that that's the community as a whole. And you begin to separate yourself from the community and have that us versus them mentality. And that carries on even when we make the arrest. You know, it's more of a cat and mouse game to me. You know, sometimes the mouse gets away, sometimes cat catches the mice. It's, you know, there's a violation. We're arresting you. We have probable cause to make an arrest. It's not up to me what the judge decides your sentence is or your release. But I can't hold it as something personal against you. It is our job in law enforcement to try to make a safer community and work with the community to see what we can do to make a safer environment. And it's not just arrest. Arrest can't be on top of what we do. It has to be on prevention. Has to be the top of the list of things we try to do.
Go ahead. Okay.
So, Sheriff, let's get into the experiment. Tell our for the folks who haven't seen the Netflix series, what is the experiment?
So the experiment is taking 6 weeks to bring detainees into a unit, and we've been experiencing a 23-in-1 because of short staff coming out of pandemic, where detainees are locked down for 23 hours a day and only allowed 1 hour out for a break. And so what we were, the experiment was to take a typical unit, move people into that unit that represents the typical facility, unit in this facility, and tell them that I'm gonna give you some responsibility. They know how the jail functions. They know that we have to feed, and there's pill calls, there's things that happen. They are fully aware of that. They go through all those rules. We share those rules with them. And we tell them that I'm going to unlock the doors. We will leave the doors open. And that's it. They don't have access to the entire facility. It's only in that pod, the individual cell doors that they would be in. Those doors would be open. And if they organize the unit to make sure phone calls, all the things need to happen, people were fed like they need to be, then the experiment was if they can function and become a community and work together and create a safe community, then I would leave the doors unlocked.
What do you say to those people that say that they're there to be locked up and that's it? They're not supposed to have these opportunities. What do you say to those individuals?
I would say to them, how would you feel if that was your family member? How would you feel about that if that was your son or your daughter that maybe has a drug addiction issue or maybe a mental health issue and committed a crime based on those things and is in jail? How do you want me to treat them? Do you hope that they come out a better person? Do you want them to be treated the right way? They don't lose, you know, they may lose their freedom, but we still have a responsibility in how we treat them. Mm-hmm. So I would just ask them, how do you feel if it's your family member? You know, and you may, this person may say, well, that my family wouldn't kill anybody. My family wouldn't steal. Well, how many times have someone driven a car and made a mistake and killed someone unintentional? Mm-hmm. And they're charged with a felony and they're going to spend time in jail. What should happen to that person? So while they need to be held accountable for their actions, mm-hmm. this is your loved one. How do you want them to be treated?
Mm-hmm. That's burns.
Yeah. So I think you say you started in 2019.
Yes.
Okay. So what are some of the early things that you maybe had to make adjustments to from when you first started the program?
Well, you know, when we started our reentry program, we had to adjust some of the classes that we teach. We had to adjust the spaces, because we initially started on actually one end of the building and part of our old jail that we still use. And the classroom area we had was really small. There wasn't enough room for maybe 10 people. And we had to move to a newer part of the jail that had a common room that we could open up, where we can have the classes in there. And funding. When I took office, I had some people help me set up a foundation, Placer County Sheriff's Prevention and Reentry Foundation. And the purpose of that to raise public funds for our youth program, our junior deputy program, and our reentry program. Because I recognize that the three sources of revenue that you lean on is, of course, the county budget, federal grants, state grants, and including those two together, and then private funds. Mm-hmm. So trying to get the money together mm-hmm. to start the program, that was a challenge. And actually, I received a donation from individual to help pilot the program. I'm excited that the individual gave $50,000 to the foundation for our reentry program to launch that. So the challenge of being able to buy the curriculum and do those things to get it started. So that was really a challenge. Now the challenge is we're running out of space in the unit we have our men in. And we started on in a barrack that has, it's an 80 bed barrack, has two sides, so there are 40 beds each. We started on one side with 40. Then we ended up taking over the other side. So we had 80, and now we're taking over a part of another unit. And so the challenge is having the space. The challenge is the space for classrooms. To be able to accommodate all our students. And then the continual challenge of trying to bring in more programming. Well, we work with a local college, Pulaski Technical College. They come in and teach a future fit class, which helps the students understand how to keep a job and get a job, mm-hmm. and also provide some mechanical training. And we want more programs in, but we don't have the space for the programs. And so that's the big challenge right now, is trying to figure out how do we expand our facility for that, and just trying to provide more. How do we continue to get to convince politicians to support what we do, that think mm-hmm. that this is important? You know, this state's going to spend, you know, $300 million building a 3,000 bed facility. And I think, you know, while we need bed space, I have about 200 detainees who are from, who are waiting for bed space for state prisons. I still think the most important thing is at a local level to have that bed space at the local level and having more programming at a local level. Mm-hmm. You know, our state prisons, their recidivism rate is about 47%. So that means in 3 years, 47% of people who are released will be back in prison.
Wow.
Our recidivism rate is at 5%. Oh, it's 2% for our men, and it's about 6% for our women. So I know what we're doing works.
Okay. Hey, that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask. What kind of data have you collected on the people that have gone through the program so far?
Yeah. So, and you know, we track what the state does on reincarceration. Mm-hmm. And that's our 5% recidivism rate. But we also track rearrests. And so that if a detainee doesn't go, finishes our program or is in the reentry unit and they get out, maybe they haven't finished our 12-week program. We still track them to see if there's any rearrest in it. And we have some who've been rearrested for not seeing a probation officer or, you know, some technical violations. And of course, we have some that'll have additional drug charges. But in all of that, we have about a 22% rearrest rate, which is still lower than the recidivism rate of mm-hmm. the state. And in those programs, you know, those rearrests, will, if they want to, they'll go back through our program. And a significant number of those numbers, the high end numbers, are from when we first started the program in 2019. So as we progress with our training and with our focus, we've seen the rearrest rates go down.
How excited are people that know that you have this program going, wanting to be a part of that program to better themselves?
A significant amount. I mean, we have more people wanting to be in than we have space. When I walk the halls in the detention center, I see people ask me, you know, hey, Sheriff, can you help me get in the program? You know, I've been waiting a couple months to get in. And, you know, so it's the word has gotten out about how this program will help you. And that's why it was so important to do try to transform the whole unit. And that's where the unlocked experiment came in. And I want you to know that our reentry unit is the safest unit in this facility. We have the fewest incidents. Now, I'm not going to say we don't have any incidents in there. We still have things happening. But it is the safest place for the detainee and for the deputies in the unit. New detainees that are transferred into the unit that get in, and I ask them, how did they feel going in? And they'll tell you that it felt different walking through the door. Mm-hmm. They felt safe. They didn't feel like they needed a shank to protect themselves. That they felt better going into it. And that's the same thing happening in the unit where we did the experiment in. I want you to know that those doors are still unlocked. When you see at the end of the show, and I say I'm leaving the doors unlocked, I left them unlocked. Mm. They have not been locked. And today I don't have anyone in that unit that started out during the show.
Wow.
Everybody's new in there. So Everyone has come in. They have conformed to the culture, to the community. And they are operating to keep that community safe, keep those doors open. And it is the second safest unit in the facility. The only one that's safer than that with a fewer incidents is our reentry unit. And so we're looking at we're planning on bringing programming into that unit. We provide some books where they can do some reading themselves. But what we're working with is our reentry unit. In that reentry unit, we have mentors in there. And we have some people that's been in there for a while in this facility. And so we're trying to coordinate to allow some of those, our reentry program is called CSI Reentry. Mm-hmm. And so some of our graduates, our mentors there, to come into that H unit and teach some classes. But I know the importance of peer support. Mm-hmm. And so we can get some people to come in there. And I do want to point out, one of the gentlemen that was in the experiment did get into our reentry program And he just graduated from our program, from our reentry, the CSI Academy. He graduated from that 2 weeks ago. So we're excited about what's going on.
How important? How do you do it? I mean, you were watching the cameras, the different things, and going, how did you maintain your composure? Because I know there's times that you just forget the program, just cut it. But you maintained and you kept your eye on the prize.
Yeah, it was a challenge. You know, the crew would tell you from Lucky Eight that it almost didn't start, almost canceled it before they started the filming. Because we moved people in the unit and we did a shakedown and we found some things in the shakedown. And I started to not do the program. Mm-hmm. But we talked about it. I believe that giving people an opportunity, they'll rise up to the expectation. And so we closely monitored, even though, you know, I know some people locally had problems with this and said I was being reckless because they didn't understand what I was doing. They didn't understand that safety was the most important thing. Mm-hmm. But it was a challenge. There was a couple of times where we really wondered, can we move forward? But we paid attention to, I paid attention to the individuals and paying attention to their behavior. And you had a few folks acting up, but for the most part, they were doing what was expected of them and they were progressing. And so you're gonna always have stumbles along the way. So just decided to keep moving. And of course I have my staff with me to give me wise counsel. And we really talked about everything that was going on and I just made decision. We'll keep going because I thought that it was going to get better and it proved to get better.
Now you talked about the inmates, but you just talked about staff. What was your staff opinion about the whole program at the beginning and how did they change?
You know, in the beginning, it was absolutely not. No, Sheriff, we can't do it. You know, that's a problem. You know, here are all the problems that are going to happen. And we talked through all of those things. I let them voice all the concerns they had. And we walked through how we could address those concerns. And, you know, eventually they came on board. Some still had doubts going through the process, but they knew that this was the direction we were going and we had to make sure we were safe. And so they worked with us. And I think at the end of the day, when we discussed leaving the doors open, I don't believe I had anybody that was opposed to leaving the doors open. Mm-hmm. So they saw the change in behavior. So it's proven itself. And I think as we try to expand, I think we'll have a little bit more buy-in. You have some people who still feel that, you know, the detainees need to be on lockdown all the time. And that's the only way it should be. They want to relinquish control. And we're not relinquishing control. All we're doing is empowering people to improve their facility. And what we've done is call these units our upper tier units. So proper behavior will have more benefits to you. And, you know, when the doors are unlocked, it releases some stress and it gives you an opportunity to try to make contact with your loved ones more on a regular basis.
Pastor Burns.
Sheriff, is there like a moment from when you start the program, you know, when you start something, that moment, like, I think this is going to work. You know, you kind of think so, but there's usually a moment or a story when it kind of clicks and you say, I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah. You know, and I base my opinion about this is watching our reentry unit, how that community came together and the struggles that they had. So part of this was thinking back in that unit. And so seeing the controversies or the conflicts was a concern. But then when you had people stepping up, you know, to make a difference, to modifying their behavior. And I'll tell you, one of the things was the gentleman that took responsibility for the hooch.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah. And you know, and I'll tell you that, you know, I didn't have during this process, I want people to know, I wasn't viewing the day-to-day in-cell videos that the Lucky Eight had. I was viewing our videos and I was getting feedback about what was going on. I could pull up the unit in my office and watch them throughout the day. But when he stepped up, when I got the report that he was taking responsibility for the actions, and he wasn't the only one involved, I know that, but and we knew that from the cameras, but because he took responsibility, I thought it was important to, instead of removing him, to leave him there, to send a message to the rest of the detainees that when you take responsibility for your actions, when you make a mistake, when you do something just wrong, and you take that responsibility, that will be taken in consideration on what actions are taken against you. And I think that was one of the turning points for me.
Which was brilliant, by the way. We had to go through, I think we have a question here. What part of the program do you believe made the biggest impact in the behavior of the inmates?
I think it was, and that's a hard question. I think it's an overall thing. Having the doors open and not when they acted up initially and the doors not closing, I think that had an impact. Of course, I'll tell you, when I finally did shut the doors down and did a reset, I think that helped them to realize that that there are consequences to their actions. And I think it helped them realize that they really didn't want to be on lockdown. And so I think that was an impact. I think when the one person stopped doing the feeding, stopped taking responsibility, and there's a little chaos, I think the people in there realized that it's better to have order. So I think that was part of it as well. It's one thing when the deputy comes in and makes order and make you do these things. Mm-hmm. It's one thing, and you just do what you're told. Mm-hmm. But I think when they saw the chaos and then the young gentleman stepped up and started doing the feeding, I think that maybe caused them to realize, hey, we are responsible for this and we can do things a little bit better.
That's perfect.
You mentioned the curriculum they follow. Can you tell us a little bit about the curriculum?
So the curriculum we have, and again, this is in the reentry, not in the H unit, mm-hmm. In our reentry unit, we talk about criminal behavior, the criminal mind. We deal with addiction. We deal with trauma. We deal with moral principles. We also do yoga classes. We deal with finance, parenting, entrepreneurship. Those are some of the classes that we deal with to help the students to be prepared to come out. And we talk to them about the first 72 hours you're out of jail. Mm-hmm. The first 72 hours you're out of jail, what you do during that period of time will have a significant impact on whether or not you go back to prison. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people get out and they want to celebrate with their friends. And it takes them down a road that mm-hmm. they had no intentions of going down. And so we try to have some concrete conversations with them, taking responsibility for their actions, get rid of the criminal mind thinking. Mm-hmm. And again, I think one of the most significant part of it is dealing with trauma. A lot of times we have trauma in our life that we don't want to talk about. And that trauma can be, we can act out on it in other ways. The addiction issues that a person may have. We try to address that and, just trying to have a holistic approach. It's a 12-week program and it takes about 6 weeks. And this is what I knew about this experiment. It takes about 6 weeks before a lot of times some of the people will, the light bulb will come on and you realize, hey, I could do something different. That I'm not just a felon. I'm not just, what people say about me, that I can't work. I'm a lost cause. I'm just a thug. It takes a little bit to get that out of your mind and to open up your mind to the possibilities that you have value, that this is what I teach in the class that I teach in the reentry program. I let them know that who they are as a person, that the God of the universe took time out of time and space to create you.
That's right.
Therefore, you have value. And that same God created me. So I have value. Our value, one's not more valuable than the other. We are equal in value because God created both of us. And then God created us with a purpose. I try to let them understand they have gifts and talents to use for good. And try to help them understand that and look at their gifts and talents. And then talk to them about that there's principles we have to follow. I mean, there's rules we got to follow. And not all rules are there to hurt you. Rules are there to help you. Mm-hmm. And if you understand who you are, that you're created by God, that you have value, that you have gifts and talents to use for good, and there's rules that we need to follow, then the proof is going to be in how you live your life. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about those things. We talk about your moral principle and what is it based on. And so we try to have those conversations and keep focusing people on the future. You know, recognize your past, recognize that you made mistakes, that those mistakes are part of your history, but they don't define who you are. And so helping them to move forward.
That's right.
So what kind of people have seen the program? What kind of feedback have you been getting and hearing of people who've seen the program?
I get positive feedback. I've been stopped in the store around here. I've been stopped in the airport. You know, in Utah, in Michigan, other places, that people are stopping me and telling me I appreciate the program. I was getting off a plane in Atlanta, and a gentleman working there stopped me as I got off the plane, and he works there, and he says, "Hey, you're the guy from," and he starts talking about his history, that he was in prison at one time, and then how important it was for him. To see that and knowing that people like him get out and they're able to work, they're able to do things, and they don't want to be stuck in the past and people are not giving them opportunities. So I've got a lot of feedback. Had a former warden from Australia send me an email about the program, about what we're doing, how important it is to help people to succeed, not just to house people. The only negative I get or have gotten has been locally from the governor's office, attorney general's office, to the legislators here, the county judge. Those are the negatives that I've received. And I think it's because they don't understand what we do. Mm-hmm. They don't understand how to address crime. They think it's just arrest, arrest, arrest. You know, crime is not this obscure obstacle out there. Crime is committed by an individual, or an individual chooses not to commit a crime. And so if you're going to address criminal behavior, you have got to address the individual. You know, have a conversation with the individual, mm-hmm. and try to help the individual, because there's so many factors that come into play that may lead someone to come to jail or to have a criminal record. I mean, there's so many students I talk to that talk about being exposed to drugs, using drugs at 9 years old, 10 years old, ladies being talked about being abused as a child and exposed to narcotics, and they're suffering their whole childhood. People growing up in a neighborhood where there's gang activity and shots being fired and you're having to sleep in a bathtub, that impacts you. That impacts your sense of safety and what you have to do to be safe. And it may take you down a road you normally wouldn't go down. And so we have to reach these individuals and help them deal with some of that trauma. You know, bring them fresh. I'm not the one to counsel them, but bring people in to provide that counseling, people who experience that. And I also think it's important to have people who have that lived experience. You know, I have people on my staff that have been in this facility. Incarcerated in this facility, have been to prison, that are working with me now to make sure that our students understand their value, that they don't just hear it from me, but they hear it from people who had that life experience. And they know that I'm serious about this. That's why I hire people who have been through our program. I'll tell you today, I have two individuals. I'll mention it. There's more than two, but two individuals that actually graduated from our programs. That are working here now as peer specialists in trying to help these students. We have a recent graduate that was hired by Plassey Tech to teach the mechanical program. Mm-hmm. When he graduated from our program, he came in and was volunteering with the instructor and just helping them teach the classes. That instructor had another opportunity and went somewhere else. So Plassey Tech hired that student, our graduate, our alumni. And now he will be teaching the classes to the other students. And that's what this is about. We have gifted and talented people who just happen to come through a criminal justice system. And we need to help those individuals and redirect them so they can help other people. So back to, I've gotten a lot of positive responses to what we're doing.
Sheriff, if people wanted to, you know, donate, you mentioned private donations are more than welcome. How could they do that?
I'd have to, I'm not really comfortable putting the information out about the foundation, because I don't, you know, I've had people accusing me of the foundation is for my purposes.
Yeah, sure. I apologize. I don't want to get into that, but I'll just say, and we have people to ask. We've interviewed
I can send you the information. I can have the foundation send you the information.
Okay.
So that if people want to donate to the foundation, and we truly need that support, because like I say, it helps our reentry and it helps our youth program, because you know we have to have a holistic approach to dealing with crime and helping our people. We got to help our kids so they don't get in the criminal justice system. If they do get in it, try to help them get out of it. And then we got to help our adults that's in the system and help them to come out and be successful.
Sheriff, you keep mentioning a word that I think is so important. Instead of cattle herding everybody, you saying treat people like individuals. How important is that?
That is the key. I mean, you know, we want to be respected. Everybody wants to be respected. I think everyone is owed that. People may make mistakes. People may actually just do the wrong thing. They did it on purpose. It wasn't a mistake. They did it on purpose. But they're still a human being. And we still need to help that individual. Because if people are committing a crime, there's a reason behind that. And we have to deal with the individual. We have to help that individual. That is the only way we make our community safer. We can't beat people down into compliance. You have to help people understand their value and understand the value of others and understand their potential and then try to help them to reach their goals and help them to deal with the struggles you're going to have. You're going to have oppositions. You're going to have people working against you. You're going to have people lying on you, you know, talking about you like a dog. You're going to have all those things, people not believing in you. But what do you do? How do you respond to those situations? Don't just react to it. How do you respond to that? And, you know, it's so important that we walk through that with them. You know, now I'll tell you that some of the controversy dealing with this show locally, and the legislators called me to a session to try to browbeat me because they didn't understand what we were doing. All that, the stress of that and the way they responded to me, I'll tell you, when I went to teach my class, I had my students asking me how I was doing.
No.
They wanted to make sure I was okay. Mm-hmm. And that just shows you that we have to have that mutual respect of one another and care for one another. And I hope that shows them, they appreciate what I'm doing for them and trying to help them. But they also understand, even when you do what's right, sometimes people are going to go after you and that we have to respond in the right way. So I think it's a learning experience for each of us.
Okay. We got a question here. Let's see if I can get it. Okay. All right. There you go.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the role involvement society plays in the criminal and juvenile justice system, and do they differ from other norms of different cultural societies?
I think we have to, my thoughts on our, the role of the community is vital. We have to be involved as a society. We have to be involved in pushing change, in pushing government in operating them the right way, and pushing the sheriff's office, the police department, city leaders, and operating in the right way. I think you can look in any city that has problems in this. That's probably generally a crime problem. It's probably generally in a certain area, which has a lack of resources. And I say that we as a society, we decide what areas of our community people will be oppressed. Mm-hmm. We'll invest in certain areas that will benefit us economically, or we think it will, but we won't invest in the other areas because we don't think there's value. We're not going to get enough money in our return. Mm-hmm. I think we have to change that. We have to decide as a community, we have to demand from our leaders that we do something to address the issues in our community. If you have a dilapidated community, how are we investing into it? Now, I'm not talking about gentrification. I'm not talking about making changes to move people out. I'm saying making changes to make it better for those who live there. Mm-hmm. And we have to take that responsibility. And I think we have to do it in the right way. We can protest about it, but I don't think we shouldn't be violent about it, because when violence just reduces the value of what we're saying, and it redirects people. I think we have to get involved in the local politics. Mm-hmm. I think we need to look at people running for office, and look at who you vote in office. You know, I'll tell you one of the disappointing things for me. You know, I never thought I'd run for any political office, but actually, the reason I ran is my wife. You know, she told me, she said, well, Eric, when people were asking me to run, we're praying about it. And she said, well, Eric, you know, you can run the sheriff's department. You spent 30 years in Little Rock Police Department. You spent 10 years as assistant chief. Last couple of years there, everything was crossing your desk. And she said, you can run the department. But she said, have you thought about that detention center? And see, I've been volunteering with reentry program for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And she said, have you thought about the detention center? She said, I think God's trying to increase your area of influence. And so when we start praying and really thinking about that and you know, having a vision for how do we transform the entire facility, how do we transform not only how we police on the street, but how we run a detention center. And during the process of running for office, I had a chance to listen to a lot of people who were running for other positions. And it was very disappointing to me to hear some people talk about running for office because they always wanted to hold office. Well, if you're running for office because you always wanted to be in office, then what are you going to do to keep office? Mm-hmm. Is there some driving principle that you're trying to push for the betterment of the community, for the betterment of society? Is that what drives you? And that's the reason you're in office and you're trying to accomplish those goals? Or are you willing just to put those goals aside just to remain in office? And so I say that to say that we need people who want to better our community. Mm-hmm. And we need people stepping up. And it is a challenge to run for office. It is a challenge to be out there. But we have to make a difference in our community. And we have to change the way we deal with juveniles, how we invest money into helping them. How do we invest in our families? And how do we invest, you know, with people coming out of jail? And we've got to do things differently. You know, at the sheriff's office, we partner with nonprofit organizations. We get food packs. We get 3 days worth of non-perishable food that we put in all the deputies' cars. And if they come across someone who has a food need, they'll give them that food pack. We work with Advance Auto. They give us $25 gift cards. And we stop a car that has busted tail light, a tail light out, head light out, something like that. Instead of writing a ticket, we give you a $25 gift card. Go get the bug fixed, but that's not a big issue. So we're trying to do things differently. We're trying to, you know, our focus is, you know, what we say our mantra is CSI. It's community focused, safety driven, integrity based. Community focused because we're part of the community, we're empowered by the community. Safety driven, not arrest driven. You have to look at the issues that create an unsafe environment and address those issues. You know, we'll make arrests, but that's not that's not the main thing that we do. And then, of course, integrity based. Let's do what's right. You know, I think we've got to have that attitude. We have to partner with organizations to bring resources into our communities so that we can help those in our community that are struggling, the marginalized. We need to help them so they can succeed.
Chair, have you been, have other states or municipalities reached out to you about the program and how to run the program?
I've had a couple of organizations reach out to me, and one I'll mention. I had an organization in Mexico City reach out and talk to them about what we're doing in our reentry program, and they're planning on coming up in a couple months to see what we're doing. So, and I know that we're doing some good things here. There's so much more we want to do. The hindrance is funding. How do you get the resources to do all the things that you need to do? And but I've had a couple reach out about it. I know there's probably other organizations that are trying to do things like this. And so the sheriff's office, they're doing some great things. And there's a great organization in Massachusetts that's doing phenomenal things. They have state funding. They actually state funds actually run the sheriff's office there. And they're doing some phenomenal things. So I know you can have an impact. We have to convince the community that is worth the investment. You know, it's unfortunate. I had a justice of the peace. That's part of the quorum court that they provide the funding for me. And, you know, when I was pushing for more mental health services in the jail, this JP said they didn't want to provide the funding. You know, don't want to spend money on people in jail. You know, and I've had them where they've had the funding and just refused to try to assist these individuals. And so it's, you know, we've got to, I can't change their thoughts. I can share all the facts with them, but they're not listening. What's going to change them is the community. And that's why I say it's so important for society, for our community to be involved, know what's going on, push the people that you elect that are holding positions, challenge them on this. Let them know what's important to you, and ensure that the funding goes where it's needed. And if they're not willing to do that, then you find someone else to elect in those positions.
Pastor Byrne, last question to you.
I wanted to ask you this. Can you tell us how your faith plays a role in what you do as a sheriff and as a public servant?
My faith is everything. My Lord Jesus Christ. I lean on him for all of this. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. God has guided me to this. I thought my law enforcement career was over, and then God gave me a vision to do something different. And you know, I wasn't even supposed to be elected. The previous sheriff wasn't running again, and he had selected his person to run. And so I didn't have the money. They had billboards up, and you know, during the election, when the early voting started, I had to ask people if I could take their signs out their yard to put it at the polling place because I didn't have any money for signs. Mm-hmm. But I was elected. I know that was of God, and I have to lean on him every day and pray. Ask him to touch my heart, touch my mind, help me to do his will. You know, when I teach the class that I teach, it's on your moral principles is what I talk about. And I talk about having a moral flag. We all have a moral flag. And what's flying on your flag? Mm-hmm. And what's flying on mine is to bring honor and glory to God. Because that has to be my focus. Because so much happens that will cause you to want in your flesh to react a different way.
Yeah.
And you have to lean on God. And all through my career, God has blessed me for my time at the Little Rock Police Department, my time here. That's the most important thing. You know, I'll tell you this. When I was running for, I was up for the chief's job at Little Rock. And my final meeting with, it was down to three of us, my final meeting with the city manager at the time, you know, God put on my heart to tell him. I said, sir, you need to know this about me. There's three things that's important to me. It's my God, my family, and then my job. And it's in that order, and it does not change. I didn't get the chief's job. I don't know if they had anything to do with it, but But I know that God guided me, because if had I gotten that job, I would have never had the opportunity to work with, volunteer with a reentry program and realize the needs in this area, and then be placed in a position to run for sheriff, and to be able to implement what we're doing now. That is of God.
Yes.
And sometimes when the door closes on you, when I retired from the police department, I had no idea what I was going to do. I was teaching some classes at a local college, but I wasn't sure where I was going. But, you know, God had a plan for me. I didn't retire to go work in the reentry program. That wasn't my plan. But God knew that I was going to go that direction, and God was going to use my my experience to place me here. And so it's very important to me and my family. I depend on my wife praying for me and helping me and giving me wise counsel. So it is the most important thing.
Sheriff, I want you to speak, as we're winding down the show, speak to those individuals that might have the opportunity to do something out of the box, but they're a little afraid because the repercussions of other people. Talk to those individuals about changing how this holding people in jail, incarceration, prison. Talk to them about stepping out of the boat.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we know what we're doing now doesn't work. We know that. And I would tell you that if you're thinking about doing something different, first thing I tell you to pray. Pray about it. You know, write down your thoughts, write down what God has given to you. Share, get some people around you that you trust, not just yes people. You don't want just yes people around you. Some people you trust, godly people, come around you and talk through what you need to do, what you're thinking about doing, and develop a plan for that. It doesn't have to, you don't have to have all the answers, but start moving in that direction. And like I say, the key is leaning on God, knowing what is your purpose behind it. What are you trying to accomplish? And as you go through those processes, know that as you succeed or as you're moving forward, don't get in the way of God, and don't get in the way of the vision. Meaning, don't let it be about you. Mm-hmm. Think about what the focus is, what you're trying to accomplish, and keep focusing on that. Stay in prayer, wise counsel, and when the challenges come, try to prepare yourself, think about the negatives that may come, and try to prepare for those things, prepare your responses to those things, but don't let the negative stop you. Keep moving forward, because this is a serious issue. We can't keep throwing people away. People are coming home, and are they going to come home better?
That's going to work.
Being in jail, it's not a good thing, and people need to be held accountable for their actions. But it impacts you mentally to be locked in a cell, and we have to look at doing things differently. United States, we have one of the highest incarceration rate, and we're just building more jail, more private prisons. We can't continue to go down this road. We're wasting money going down this road. And so I encourage you, those out there who want to do something different, try to do it differently. Try to move forward with your ideas and get wise counsel and just do it.
Sheriff Eric S. Higgins, we want to thank you for your time today.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. And if anyone wants any information regarding the foundation or any information from us, I can get you that information. You can go to pcso.org. That's our website. You can email me. It's simple. It's Sheriff Higgins at PCSO. So if you'll just you can email me or reach out to me. Or if they reach out to y'all and you have someone you want us to get in contact with, we can do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank
Listen,
you.
That's the end of the show. I want to thank Sheriff Eric Higgins from Arkansas. Listen, as we say every week, go and sow a seed in somebody's life. You never know who you're going to touch. Take care. God bless. We'll see you next week on Touring Into.